KALW.
When I did turn 18, it was kind of like my opportunity to say, this is what I think, and this is what I want to see happen. And voting is the best way to do that, at least at my age.
This November will mark a major milestone for a whole lot of young people.
Voting should not be scary. It should be easy. It should be as easy as possible. And what we hear is people are confused. They feel they don't know enough.
It can be daunting, and depending on where you are, a potentially baffling experience.
They feel it's intimidating, and we're trying to say, no, 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 it's really simple. And do not be afraid to ask any questions, because other people are trying to make it really unsurmountable.
It's the new episode of our podcast, TBH, made by, about, and for teenagers. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Today, we're bringing you the second episode of the new season of TBH, our podcast made by teenagers with help from instructors and editors in our KALW High School Summer Podcasting Institute. And this episode is all about voting. I'll hand it over to the hosts.
This is TBH. I'm Anthura Gangwal, a senior at Leland High School and your host for today's episode. This podcast is made by, about, and for teenagers, and for anybody else who wants to hear what's on our minds.
And I'm Amali Madrid Lilly. Anthura, I really liked hearing your story about climate advocacy last week. We talked a bit about how it's a way to have a voice in our political system, even though you can't vote. But are you ready to hear what you can do when you can vote?
Yes, definitely. And that's what today's story is all about. Voting for the first time can be overwhelming. Many first-time voters report feeling underqualified or not educated enough to cast their ballot. Our next producer, Charlotte King, just graduated from Lick Wilmerding High School in San Francisco. She's getting ready to vote for the first time and is going to tell us all about it. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi.
Tell me about your experience as a new voter.
Yeah, so last December, I turned 18, and so I was old enough to vote. And my first time voting was in the local elections in March of 2024. To be completely honest, I felt so guilty and like such a bad citizen. I knew I didn't know enough about ballot issues and candidates, and I wasn't making enough of an effort to find the resources and educate myself.
Why do you think that is?
Honestly, I just felt very daunted by it all. There were so many topics with various nuances. The legal jargon just really confused me when I began researching everything. I felt like I was going down a rabbit hole. I realized that to be prepared, I need to start earlier, focus, and make a plan.
Were the technicalities of voting similarly confusing for you?
Not really. The state agency that deals with voting automatically registers you when you turn 18. That is, if you select that you would like to be pre-registered when you get your driver's license, which I did. You provide personal information, such as proof of residency, to get your license. The state agency uses that to register you once you turn 18.
Not everybody would pick a story about process rather than policy. Why is this subject matter so important to you?
So, a couple of things. Firstly, I wanted to use this as a learning experience. I wanted to be more prepared than I was in March. I'm also moving to Vermont to start college, and I wanted to fully understand all the nuances of the voting process, such as location, time, and restrictions. I didn't want administrative stumbles to sabotage my shot to vote in such a historic election. It's such an important right we have as Americans. You know, as TBH producer Annabelle Rabinowitz pointed out last season, it's been one that's hard fought for. So I wanted to demystify the process for my friends as they head off to college and all over the country. Some of them will be going to school in swing states that could determine the outcome of the presidential election. I want them to be prepared to find out well ahead of time all the where, whens, and hows of voting so that they don't miss their shot at voting. This is such a history-making election. Just 48 hours after Harris announced her candidacy, nearly 40,000 people registered, according to voter.org. Nearly 90% of those people were under the age of 35. What makes 2024 especially significant is that it's the 60th anniversary of the Freedom Summer, when groups of college students traveled to Mississippi in 1964 to embark on a huge voter registration drive. That drive and the events associated with it led to the passage of both the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act.
That's so interesting. I didn't know that, and I'm sure a lot of new voters didn't either. Charlotte is now a freshman at the University of Vermont. Her story takes us through her journey of learning about how you need to prepare, schedule, and have a plan to cast your ballot, if you want your voice to count.
I'm actually so sad about it,
like going to college.
Like, yeah. I'm really excited.
But like, I'm at my friend Carolina Fox's house on San Francisco's iconic Twin Peaks.
When do you leave?
We walk from her kitchen, down the stairs, to her room on the bottom floor. The late afternoon fog is starting to roll in. We sit on one of two couches in the left corner of her room. I haven't seen her since we graduated a month ago. We're looking into how she can register to vote when she moves away to college.
You said you don't know how to register to vote yet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to look up to see, like, how to register to vote in Louisiana?
To vote in Louisiana. Okay, the first thing that comes up is online voter registration, register to vote.
This November, my friends and I will be able to vote in our first presidential election. Like many of my peers, I'm excited. Many of us are making plans to make the most of this privilege. For a lot of us, though, it's the process of voting that's daunting. Most of my friends are planning to go to college. Some of them are moving out of state. We're all going to be busy registering for classes, moving out and moving in, making new friends, and starting new lives. Voting is an administrative task that we have to ensure we make time for, especially when there are forces working to discourage us from participating in the process. The difference between prioritizing guns or children's lives could boil down to whether just a few more of my peers registered in time to cast a ballot. Ever since I was in middle school, I figured that even if you don't believe in the way the political system is set up in America, voting is a chance to push democracy in the direction you want it to go. Opting out of voting doesn't opt you out of the political system. The policies, laws, and politicians will still affect your life. This is true for every choice you make in your life. If your cafeteria is either serving hot dogs or hamburgers, and you decide not to pick which one you want, you will still get either a hot dog or a hamburger. You still have to eat the lunch. Your vote is your decision on who you want to represent you, on every level. So why would you let anyone else decide your future? That's why figuring out the voting process this November was high up on my to-do list when I was preparing to go to college. I'll be moving from the urban city of San Francisco to the Green Mountain State to attend the University of Vermont. This summer, I started preparing by calling the university. They directed me to their voter resources webpage. That's where I found where I could register with something called TurboVote, as well as information about where the closest polling place is to campus. The resource page also included a list of organizations and guides to learn about ballot topics. I skimmed the state government's websites and Vermont News and decided that I still wanted to vote in California. I realized the issues felt more urgent to me in my home state. For example, I care about access to education, the environment, reproductive rights, affordable housing, and school safety. I'm choosing to vote in California so I can push for the change I want to see in my hometown. When I was only 10, I became harshly aware of how wildfires were destroying California. Each time ash would float through my window, it would send me into an emotional spiral. I felt completely helpless and incapable of saving the places I know and love. I might have been daunted by the process of voting, but I knew it was a chance for me to feel a little less helpless. Luckily for me, California makes voting as convenient as possible. I barely had to even think about registering to vote. The state registered me on the voter rolls when I got my driver's license. When the election rolled around in March, my ballot arrived in the mail.
For decades, America's youngest voters, those under the age of 30, were the least likely to show up at the polls.
Well, CBS News polling shows young people who are registered to vote are much less likely to head to the polls in November than older people.
Young people vote at notoriously low rates. The majority of youth say they have the power to change the country, but fewer say they feel well qualified to participate in politics. and just under a quarter of them cast a ballot. That's according to a 2022 survey by Tufts University's Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement, which is also known as CIRCLE. College-educated students are much more likely to vote. A staggering 83% of them were registered in 2020, but only 66% of them actually voted. That's according to the National Study of Learning, Voting, and Engagement, otherwise known as NSOLVE. When young people understand how important they are to the political system, they're more likely to vote, researchers have found. My peers and I feel we can't identify nonpartisan, accurate resources or are overwhelmed by the voter registration process. It can feel like a hassle to remember each of your logins to news sites. Many of us don't even have subscriptions to local journalism. On Election Day, in March, I made my choices based on information from the ballot pamphlet, answers from research, and friends' advice. I felt underprepared. I didn't want to just vote for what my parents were voting for, even though I agree with many of their beliefs. I didn't want to feel like I was blindly following them. Many of my peers from Lycoming, the high school where I went, also struggled with educating themselves on the ballot. I spoke to my friend Mason. He's moving to Illinois to attend Northwestern. Both Carolina and Mason were eligible to vote in the San Francisco local elections in March of 2024. It had been a day they were looking forward to.
I knew since I was like 10 that I could vote in this presidential election.
I pre-registered multiple times when I got my driver's license, at a fair. I think I've pre-registered a third time, so I wasn't sure, but it all worked out, and I got my ballot.
Mason and Carolina both think of voting as a privilege and an opportunity for engagement.
I think I've followed politics well prior to turning 18 years old, and so when I did turn 18, it was kind of like my opportunity to say, this is what I think, and this is what I want to see happen, and voting is the best way to do that, at least at my age.
Youth voting rates are rising. Half of 18 to 29-year-olds voted in 2020, up from 40% in 2016, according to CIRCLE. And we're becoming even more influential. By 2024, Gen Zers and millennials will become the biggest voting bloc in the country. That's according to Civic Influencers, an organization that supports youth civic engagement. We have an incredible amount of sway over elections. So what do young people care about? Inflation and gas prices, abortion and reproductive health, the job market, climate change, and gun violence prevention. These are the top issues on young people's minds, CIRCLE says. These are all big, heavy topics. It's even more complicated in California, where we have to decide on so many of these issues. There were 17 statewide initiatives in 2016. The voter guide for them was 224 pages long. I know I am not alone in not wanting to read a 224-page document to prepare for voting. It turns out there's a lot of organizations who are here to help young people eligible to vote. Maxim Thorne is the CEO of Civic Influencers. It focuses on mobilizing young people, especially young people of color.
Voting should not be scary. It should be easy. It should be as easy as possible. And what we hear is people are confused. They feel they don't know enough. They feel it's intimidating. You are not going to give up that inheritance of our democracy.
If you reach out to them, they can help you make a plan. They will remind you when the deadline to register to vote is, help you find your polling site and how you will get there, and if you need it, help find you transportation. The League of Women Voters also does similar work. Founded in 1920, it has chapters all across the U.S., powered by volunteers. They set up informational stands for voter registration, visit schools to educate young people on how to vote, and provide many resources and voting guides on their website. There's a lot of support for how to register to vote as a college student, but the choice of which state you vote in is a personal one. Carolina has already decided.
All of the restrictions in Louisiana are going to be what impacts me now because I won't be living as a Californian anymore. I won't have the privileges that Californians do have.
My friend Mason is still evaluating his options.
I'm still trying to decide whether or not I want to register as a voter in the state of Illinois versus maintaining like permanent residence here in California.
Fortunately, whether Carolina and Mason vote in Louisiana, Illinois, or California, voter registration and voting itself are actually pretty manageable. In all three states, you can register online, through the mail, or in person. They also all have relatively less strict voter ID restrictions. Not every state makes voting so easy.
Voting sites on college campuses could be banned under a proposed Texas bill. Some call it an act of voter suppression.
Others believe it's a matter of school safety.
Civic influencers Thorne has coined a term for what states like Texas are doing.
Generational gerrymandering, I think, is my attempt to capture the crisis that young people are facing when it comes to voting and registering to vote in our country today. It is a system of tactics, laws, practices to stop young people from voting.
In Ohio, for example, a 2023 law invalidated student IDs as a form of voter registration. This disenfranchises many eligible college students who may not have a driver's license or a passport, for example. Things become even more complicated when young people move out of state for college.
The time between a student stepping foot on a campus and then the election is really quick, and in some states they have early deadlines for registration.
That was Adam Gismondi, the director of NSolve. He echoed the idea that many young people feel turned off by the system. He also encourages colleges to get advice from students on which voter resources were most helpful. Many young people question whether their vote matters. Many have lost trust in the system in an era of political chaos and division. Voting doesn't mean just casting your ballot for who will become president. There's layers upon layers of things you get to voice your opinion on.
Everything you do is political. If you're using a public park for your club or your sports team, that's political.
That was Michael Redmond, a self-described activist, organizer, a campaign staffer, and a recent graduate climate and environmental scientist. He's also a San Francisco native.
You know, it just takes one issue to activate a whole group of people and make them realize that, no, these are, you know, things that are impacted heavily by public policy.
Local elections can decide how that public park is maintained. That's something you care about, something your friends care about. Especially when elections are so close, the difference of votes between one outcome or another could be as big as that sports team you play with. The fight to have a civic and political voice is ongoing, and it's not over. In 2023, 11 states introduced more restrictive voting laws. Many of these laws introduced stricter voter identification rules, limit the work of voter registration organizations, and ban ballot drop boxes. The fight has even expanded to encompass new demographics, such as to us, young voters. So we have to be vigilant. Whoever ends up in power will determine the fairness and freedom of the systems that make up American life. That's why my friends and I are putting so much thought into where we vote. Okay, beginning my packing. Back in San Francisco, Carolina and I are starting her packing.
Okay, so this is the first box. As you can see, it's completely empty.
Yeah.
I have, in fact, not started my packing. That's due in days.
That's okay.
But...
nice.
It's okay. True Religions.
Oh, yeah.
Gotta be. My heaviest pair of pants. I can never bring these with me on vacation.
Okay. If you're moving out of state for college this fall, like Carolina, and especially if you're moving to a swing state, you should look into voting as soon as you get to campus. Find out the deadlines for registering, how you can register, where to get your ballot, and where to cast it. Most colleges have a voter resources page, which is a great place to start. You can also look at the Secretary of State's website or the League of Women Voters for your state to find out about the voting process. If you're debating whether to vote in your home state or at college, Civic Influencers provides a very helpful heat map, featuring which states are swing states for various races. Voting in swing states, meaning Nevada, Arizona, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, or Georgia, is even more important in this election.
Educate yourself to understand how your vote can create the biggest impact.
Thanks, Charlotte. I can't wait for first-time voters to hear your story. So, Amalia, what are we hearing about next week?
Next week, we'll hear from Jessica Kim. She's telling us about teen dating violence and her story in exploring her role in advocacy.
I'm really looking forward to hearing about her work on that. That's next time. Stay tuned.
For more on the election from the youth perspective, check out PBS News' Student Reporting Lab's On Our Minds podcast. They also have a new season out. Many of the student reporters are from the San Francisco Bay Area. They also explain key concepts important to the voting process, such as what is the Electoral College anyway? Podcast episodes come out every 2 weeks. You can find On Our Minds on the PBS News website or wherever you get your podcasts.
You've been listening to TBH, a podcast from KALW Public Radio. The feature you heard in this episode was produced by Charlotte King. It was edited by Sarah Lai Sterling, who taught in the program along with Truk Nguyen.
Ava Richards is our production assistant. Our artwork was created by Awan Mance. James Rollins and Tarek Fuda are our engineers. Shireen Adel is our supervising editor. Ben Trefney is our executive producer. This project was made possible with support from the California Arts Council, California Humanities, Silicon Valley Community Foundation, and Association for Continuing Education. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Amalia Madrid-Lilly, along with Anthra Gungwal.
That was episode 2 of the latest season of TBH, our KALW podcast made by, about, and for teenagers. We'll be playing new episodes every Monday. You can find that story and all our past seasons at kalw.org/TBH. And subscribe to listen on your favorite podcast player. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Up next, a reading from New Arrivals, our pocket-sized book tour. Today, we hear from Oakland poet Madeline Cravens. Her new collection, Pleasure Principle, is about queer relationships and family history.
Not the pleasure of lovers, but the pleasure of letters. A pleasure like weather, delayed and prepared for. Not the pleasure of lessons, but the pleasure of errors, of nightmares, of actors in the black box of a theater. Not the pleasure of present, but the pleasure of later. The pleasure of letters and weather and terror. Asleep by the lake, unable to answer. The pleasure of candles, their wax on the table. Not the pleasure of saviors, but the pleasure of errors. Not the pleasure of marriage, but the pleasure of failure. The pleasure of characters like family members, their failures and errors, their laughter and weather. The pleasure of water, terrible rivers. Not the pleasure of empire, but the pleasure of after. Our failure to keep an accurate record. Not the pleasure of tethers, but the pleasure of strangers, the terrible strangers who will become your lovers. Not the pleasure of novels, but the pleasure of anger, your failure to answer all of my letters. The pleasure of daughters, the pleasure of daughters writing letters in April, the failure of orchards, the terror of mothers. Not the pleasure of planners, but the pleasure of errors.
That was Madeline Cravens reading from her poetry collection, Pleasure Principle. It came out in June. New Arrivals is produced by Lisa Morehouse. Find more Bay Area authors reading from their books at kalw.org/newarrivals. tomorrow morning at 11. We'll examine the idea that wilderness should be left alone.
Our people have been on this landscape for tens of thousands of years and governing ourselves and doing just fine.
The next episode of How Wild, tomorrow morning at 11. Before we say goodbye, here's some music from a Bay Area band. This is Oakland band Oxide. They're playing in San Francisco this Friday at Bottom of the Hill. Today's Cross Currents team includes Gonady Joe Johnson, Victor Tense, Molly Blair Salyer, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega Welch, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.